Rama, bewildered. After saving the boys and calves from the mouth of Agasura, death personified, Krishna, who was full of transcendental qualities, ordered his fortunate companions to gather the calves that had strayed away like meandering deer and follow him back to Vrindavana. Krishna displayed intense love and affection toward his friends by tending calves and playing with them. To bestow his mercy upon the world, Krishna performed many captivating pastimes in the mood of an ordinary boy. The cowherd boys carried bundles of delicious food items which their mothers had prepared in the morning, tied on sticks that rested on their shoulders. On the way home, Krishna noticed an ideal spot for a forest picnic just beside the Yamuna. "Look, my friends," said Krishna, "the birds are not flying here. It is a nice, quiet place, pleasing to the eyes and as comfortable as the lap of a mother. There are no footprints on the bank. Therefore, it is a perfect picnic site. Let the calves graze nearby while we honor Prasad." After hearing the statement of Krishna, who is the supreme transcendence and a marvelous person at the same time, the cowherd boys said, "You and I are the same. Since we feel hungry, you must also. So let us take Prasad." Krishna agreed, "Yes, what a splendid idea. Let us sit here and take Prasad." A circle of tall green trees whose branches joined overhead to form a natural canopy shaded the picnic spot. The earth, as pure and white as powdered camphor, looked as though it had been washed with liquid silver. A gentle breeze filled with droplets of water scented with the sweet smell of blossoming lotuses cooled and refreshed the entire area. That peaceful wind felt soothing to the touch and created a pleasing atmosphere along the bank of the Yamuna. With his golden effulgence, attractive bluish complexion, and elegant yellow dress, Krishna looked like the whirl of a lotus surrounded by a thousand petals as he sat in the center, encircled by lines of cowherd boys. Krishna's intimate friends sat nearest him. They appeared like rays of the sun sitting in rows around the Lord. The innermost rays glowed with a reddish hue. As the rays moved further from the center, they displayed a gradation of colors from orange to yellow, green, blue, and violet. This rainbow-like display of colors looked attractive. Although the boys sat in different distances from the Lord, they each felt that Krishna was looking directly at them when he glanced their way. This pastime confirms the words of the learned sages who claim that everywhere are the Lord's eyes and faces as well as his arms and legs. At that time, Krishna said, "Oh, my friends, now please take all the foodstuffs off your carrying poles." Their full tiffins emitted brilliant effulgences in all directions. The cowherd boys placed their prasad on flowers or leaves on the rocks, the bark of trees, or on their chadars. Some held the prasad in the auspicious lines of their palms, and a few put it on their strongly built thighs. Other boys artistically arrayed their best prasad on leaf plates and affectionately offered it to Krishna. As Krishna ate, he spoke sweet words that washed over his lips like a stream of nectar. Moving his hands in expressive mudras, Krishna took great pleasure entertaining the boys with witty words. They responded by telling funny jokes that filled Krishna with laughter. The blissful smiles on the lotus faces of the cowherd boys revealed the happiness of their hearts. Krishna's warm personal dealings increased the affection felt by his boyfriends. The whole scene appeared breathtaking. With a flute tucked tightly in his waist on the right side, and a buffalo horn and cow-driving stick tucked on his left side, Krishna's thin, perfectly shaped waist attracted the minds of everyone. Krishna ate some pickles with his right hand while holding a nice preparation of yogurt and rice in his left palm. With his hands moistened by these different foods, Krishna looked magnificently beautiful. Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and other denizens of heaven marveled at the extraordinary sight of Krishna eating with his friends in the forest. Due to his false ego, Brahma thought himself the supreme creator. but witnessing the awesome power of Krishna in killing Nagasura astounded him. He thought, Krishna is the supreme controller of everything. Nevertheless, let me test his actual position. As one becomes a laughingstock by trying to measure the ocean with a yardstick or measuring the sky with a handspan, similarly, Brahma became a laughingstock by his foolish attempt to fathom the unlimited transcendental power of Krishna by purloining his calves. Although similarities exist between Krishna and Brahma, or between a glowworm and the sun, the differences are vast. Both Brahma and Krishna have illusory energy, but Krishna alone enchants Brahma and the entire creation. The gopis forgot all about the calves as they happily took prasad with Krishna. It appeared as if the gopis' lips bathed in the radiance of their teeth as they joked and laughed. During this time, Brahma stealthily stole their calves. After some time, when the coward boys looked for the calves, they could not find them. Feeling sad and helpless, they appealed to Krishna, who is greater than Lord Shiva. Oh, beloved friend, we cannot find any of our calves. It seems they have wandered far away, being greedy to eat fresh grass. Let us enter the forest and search for them. While listening, Krishna's face looked more charming than a splendid full moon. Smiling compassionately, Krishna spoke to mitigate their fear. My dear friends, do not stop eating. Just stay here. I shall personally find the calves and bring them to you. Krishna put down his food and went to collect the calves. He looked very attractive, walking along with his flute, stick, and buffalo horn tucked in his dhoti. The wonderful effulgence of his body illuminated the entire forest. Although the area abounded with fresh grass, Krishna did not find hoof prints or any other sign of the calves, even after searching in all directions. Much to his surprise, when Krishna returned to the banks of the Yamuna, he could not find any of his coward boyfriends. Though temporarily exhibiting a touch of bewilderment, Krishna displayed his omniscience by concluding that Brahma, the supreme creator of the material world, had succumbed to his illusory potency and stolen both the calves and his boyfriends. The all-knowing Lord then employed his spiritual energy to expand himself into the exact forms of each one of the missing calves and boys. Krishna miraculously appeared with all of their attributes, including their individual moods, mannerisms, dress, ornaments, and carrying sticks. Then, playing his sweet flute, Krishna gladly proceeded home to Vrindavan. The Supreme Lord directly creates everything in this universe. He is the only cause and effect of all actions in this world. Nonetheless, the material world is full of Krishna's variegated transcendental pastimes. Because the Supreme Lord is unique, wonderful, and inconceivable, the universe displays the same qualities. As usual, the coward boys, who are now expansions of Krishna, dance gleefully to the captivating sound of Krishna's flute. Their frolicking steps enriched Mother Earth with the quality of bliss. Whistling on their panpipes, they called their beloved calves and returned to Vrindavan. When they arrived home, their mothers showered the same affection on them that they had previously shown to Krishna. Overflowing with parental love, each mother felt unlimited joy upon seeing her son, who is none other than Krishna. Previously, the Brajavasis had more affection for Krishna than for their own children. But now, for 1 year, they displayed ever-increasing affection toward their sons, the expanded forms of Krishna. The coward boy expansions of Subal, Sridham, and others pleased their mothers with their usual activities of bathing, eating, and dressing. Unlike other days, however, on that day the boys did not describe the pastimes they had enjoyed with Krishna. The calves ran to their respective mothers, who affectionately licked their bodies again and again, merging in an unlimited ocean of bliss. Overwhelmed with parental love, the cows mooed with deep, loving voices, and then slept with their calves. When Krishna returned home, Nanda picked him up, embraced him, and placed him on his lap. Nanda feared that his beard might scratch Krishna's delicate face, which is softer than a lotus. Lifting up Krishna's turban, Nanda Maharaj smelled his head and then affectionately kissed him. Although enjoying the highest pleasure just by smelling his son's head, Nanda cried when Krishna jumped off his lap to run to Mother Yashoda, the perfect form of parental love. Yashoda lovingly fondled her son, massaged him with fragrant oil, and bathed him to remove the dust from grazing the calves. Then she dressed Krishna in fresh clothing and fed him sumptuously. After satisfying her invincible son, who is the embodiment of eternity, Yashoda put him to rest on a comfortable bed covered with a mattress as white as the foam of milk. At sunrise the next day, Yashoda and the other mothers prepared their sons for going to the forest by carefully decorating them with different ornaments. After taking breakfast, all the boys met Krishna in the courtyard of his house. Since he could not proceed to the forest without first pleasing his parents, Krishna allowed Nanda and Yashoda to caress him to their heart's content. Even then, they insisted on accompanying him to the edge of the forest. Collecting all his intimate friends in their calves, his own expansions, Krishna walked toward the forest. Krishna took the coward boys and calves to pasture near Govardhan Hill. When the cows that were already grazing on Govardhan Hill saw Krishna, they ran down the hill so fast that they appeared to be flying. Leaving their own calves and newborns behind, the cows displayed intense parental love toward Krishna and the calves accompanying him. In reality, Krishna had expanded as all these calves. Though trying, the coward men could not stop the cows with their sticks. Impelled by strong motherly affection, the cows mooed lovingly while smelling and licking these calves. They neither moved nor ate any grass. On the other hand, the boys could not restrain their calves. Neither the boys nor the coward men could separate the cows from those calves. The coward men felt pain in their legs from running after the calves. Upon seeing their sons, however, the expanded forms of Krishna, they forgot all pains and immersed in an ocean of parental love. The coward men felt supremely blissful from embracing their tender sons, smelling their heads, and kissing them. Placing them on their laps, they cried affectionately out of great joy, their chests drenched from the tears pouring from their eyes. Then, with great difficulty and reluctance, they gradually stopped embracing their sons and allowed them to return to Krishna. Balaram, although happy to see the intense love shared between the cows and calves, felt doubtful about it since the calves had already grown up and stopped sucking milk from their mothers. He pondered, "Aha! How astonishing! My affection and that of all the Brajavasis towards these boys and calves is increasing as never before. It perfectly resembles the love we all feel for Krishna, the supersoul of every living entity. This must be a display of the Lord's inconceivable energy, Achincha Shakti. Otherwise, how could I, the elder brother of that unborn Lord who wields the disc that destroys the illusory energy, become bewildered by some mystical display of Maya? Therefore, I will inquire from that crest jewel of all mystics." Balaram said, "Krishna, I'm amazed. I have faith that you possess superior intelligence beyond my comprehension. Now I can see that you alone have manifested yourself in different forms of these calves and boys. They are none other than expansions of your personal energy as four-armed Narayan forms. Please tell me, why have you done this?" Honoring Balaram's request, Yashodanandana satisfied him by describing the pastime from beginning to end. No one can count the unlimited waves of Krishna's blissful pastimes. After waiting a moment, in his celestial time standard, Brahma returned to Vrindavan. He was totally astonished to see Krishna playing with the boys and calves just as before, even though a year had passed by earthly calculation. Greatly bewildered, Brahma thought, "Are these the same calves I stole? Or have some other calves appeared in their place? Actually, it appears the calves I stole are all illusory, and that these are the real calves." Brahma's pride being crushed, he chastised himself for attempting to show off his paltry power before the unlimited potency of Lord Krishna, who who mystifies the whole universe. Rather than bewildering the Lord, Brahma perplexed himself with his mystic force. This offensive act filled Lord Brahma with great remorse. As Brahma gazed at the boys, he saw them as four-hand Vishnu forms fully decorated with priceless ornaments and holding the four symbols of the Lord, conchal, lotus, club, disc. These forms embodied unlimited bliss and knowledge, and their combined effulgences surpassed the light of millions of suns and moons. Their bodily hairs stood erect in ecstasy, and the perspiration coming from their bodies resembled the globe-like universes rising from the pores of Lord Vishnu. All these Vishnu forms of bluish hue wore yellow silken garments that glowed like lightning. They were bedecked with jeweled earrings, crowns, necklaces, armlets, and glittering golden bangles that jingled sweetly. Swarms of buzzing bees hovered above the fresh, tender tulsi garlands that hung to their thighs. The tiny tinkling bells suspended from their golden belts emitted delicate, enticing sounds. Then Brahma saw that space, the time factor, the three modes of material nature, the five elements, the seasons, the eight mystic perfections, the nine planets, the ten directions, the presiding deities of the senses, the 14 manus, and all the other aspects of the material creation had been subjugated by the potency of the Lord. They had taken personal forms to worship the Lord. Those Vishnu forms, whose transcendental bodies shone with beauty and opulence, blessed everyone with their compassionate sidelong glances. One can perceive this truth only by the mercy of the Lord. Understanding Brahma's bewilderment, Krishna at once removed the curtain of his yoga maya. Then Brahma realized that Vasudeva is everything, and he immediately saw Vasudeva, the absolute truth, standing before him in Vrindavan as Krishna. With a stick, flute, and buffalo horn tucked in the sash around his neck and a lump of rice and yogurt in his hand, the absolute truth, Sri Krishna, was searching everywhere for the calves and his coward friends. The transcendental form of Krishna acts as a rasayana life-giving tonic to all of his friends. After seeing this, Brahma hastily got down from his swan carrier and fell down before the Lord like a golden stick. He touched the lotus feet of Krishna with the tips of his four crowns, which appeared like the four golden peaks of Mount Sumeru. The effulgence of the costly jewels on these crowns seemed to be running out to touch the lotus feet of the Lord. The unlimited radiance of Krishna's toe rings, however, neutralized that effulgence. Merely by the touch of Krishna's splendid toenails, the effulgence of Brahma attained perfection. Offering his obeisances, Brahma bathed the feet of Krishna with his tears of joy. Krishna responded by exhibiting an extremely grave mood. As the puppet master of this entire pastime, Krishna moved everyone and everything according to his own desire. He enacted the drama to show the whole universe a wonderful display of his transcendental energy. Realizing the severity of his offense, Brahma offered obeisances again and again at the lotus feet of the Lord. Then Brahma, his head bent low and his body trembling, very humbly glorified Krishna with faltering words. O son of Brajaraj Nanda, all glory is to you. Your enchanting Gunja necklace shines brighter than the moon. A splendid forest garland swings on your transcendental body. Equipped with a herding stick, buffalo horn, and flute tucked in your belt, you stand beautifully with a morsel of food in your hands. I glorify your wonderful transcendental body that is the source of consciousness. O Lord, you have displayed a unique manifestation of thousands of boys and calves just to bestow mercy upon me. All these Vishnu expansions are but transformations of your inconceivable energy. I cannot begin to perceive or properly praise your majestic opulences. O cause of all causes, all these boys and calves now have four hands holding conch, disc, mace, and lotus. They are the embodiments of bliss, knowledge, and all opulences. O unconquerable one, although you stand before me in your beautiful two-armed form as a coward boy, your transcendental nature remains unchanged by this transformation. One who gives up the loving service of your lotus feet which bestow unlimited bliss and enlightenment and tries to enjoy material life derives nothing but the hard labor of the endeavor. It is just like the foolish attempt to gain rice grains by beating the empty husk of rice paddy. O unconquerable one, you are completely independent, yet you are overcome by the ocean of your own compassion. Therefore, to benefit the conditioned souls, you exhibit an unlimited reservoir of sweet transcendental pastimes. In ancient times, there lived some intelligent Paramahansas, the true ornaments among learned scholars. They expressed their genuine love for you by glorifying your nectarian qualities and remembering your lotus feet. Thus they attained eternal residence in your blissful abode. Ordinary Mahatmas cannot fathom your magnificence. One can realize your true glories only by rendering pure devotional service. But one cannot understand you just by cultivating scriptural knowledge. O Supreme Controller, you are an ocean of transcendental qualities. You have descended on earth to benefit everyone. If one could possibly count all the atoms in the earth, the stars in the sky, or the particles of snow, still he could not even know a single quality of yours. One who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, while patiently suffering the reactions of his past karma, and always serving you with his body, mind, and heart, will definitely inherit your inexhaustible abode. My disrespectful dealings towards you and your friends are reprehensible. You are the supreme controller and the foremost of all mystics. O Lord, just see my impudence. To test your power, I try to extend my illusory potency to cover you. But my potency covered and bewildered me instead. What am I compared to you? I am just like a small spark in the presence of a great fire. O ocean of mercy, I am the predominating deity of the mode of passion. Due to false ego, I became proud and blind to the truth. My mind is full of evil. But please consider that I too am your servant and therefore worthy of your compassion. Unlimited universes pass through the pores of the body of Mahavishnu, who is one of your expansions. Although I am in charge of this one apparently gigantic universe, what is the value of my lordship compared to your inconceivable power? Does a mother take offense when her child in her womb playfully kicks her? Similarly, you will not take offense with my misbehavior, since everything that exists is within you. O Supreme Controller, when you lie on the causal ocean, a lotus flower grows from your navel and I take birth from that lotus flower. Therefore, you are my father. Even if a son is disobedient and misbehaves, still the benevolent father never shuns him, O Lord. You are the supersoul of all embodied beings. Taking the name Narayan, you are the resting place of all living entities. You embody unlimited patience and remain undisturbed in all situations. O Lord, not by the force of law, but by your will you lie in the water. You are free from all contamination and the shelter of all truths. Why did you suddenly reveal yourself when I could not see you clearly within my heart? O Lord, if your body belongs to the material creation, then how could the whole creation fit within your belly? Externally, this material world seems to be false, but it appears very real when it is within your belly. Since your body is made completely of consciousness, how could you be touched by matter? O ocean of mercy, though considered illusory, the material world is also actually real but temporary. You have created it as a reflection of the spiritual world which is real and eternally existent. No one can understand the mysterious action of your spiritual energy. As direct expansions of you, all the calves and coward boys manifest eternal forms of bliss and knowledge. Even though these particular coward boys never existed before, it does not mean that they are illusory. If one accepts them as material, then he cannot comprehend their transcendental origin. A self-realized person exists beyond the limits of material illusion. Oh, today I have seen a display of your inconceivable potencies and matchless opulences. As the supreme mystic, you enchant everyone in the three worlds. You are the embodiment of bliss and knowledge, and your various forms are also made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Your appearance in the material world cannot be compared with the birth of ordinary living entities. Your transcendental birth distinguishes you from any ordinary mystic yogi. You alone stood in the beginning of this pastime. Then, by your own potency, you expanded into the forms of your many calves and friends. These forms were all forearmed and transcendental. Despite this mystic play of your unlimited opulence, you remain the same. Such are your playful transcendental pastimes. O Lord, for those who cannot comprehend your personal pastimes, you present yourself as the Supersoul within their hearts. You are famous as the Creator, Maintainer, and Destroyer. O Supreme Controller, all these are manifestations of your unlimited potencies. O Omnipotent One, you appear among the sages, demigods, and humans to benefit the pious and punish the miscreants. Your incarnations are completely transcendental and free from the contamination of the illusory energy. Although your body resembles that of an ordinary human within this material world, it is completely transcendental. Your face, hands, and legs are made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. My Lord, you are the highest truth and the energetic source of all potencies. You possess all conceivable opulences and are the crest jewel in the crowns of the universal controllers. Without any effort, you can easily stop destined events or make the impossible possible. Your glories, therefore, are far beyond the ability of an insignificant person like me to describe. O Lord, you are the source of unlimited forms and incarnations. You are the greatest among self-realized yogis. Neither Lord Shiva nor I could ever possibly imitate your astonishing pastimes. There is no one in this universe that can understand even a fraction of your unique transcendental nature. O Supreme Controller, this temporary illusory universe differs from Vaikuntha, your spiritual realm, because it gives distress to everyone without exception. Since you are the personification of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, whenever you appear in this world, you manifest the joy of Vaikuntha. You are one without a second, the epitome of pleasure and the embodiment of spiritual knowledge. You perfectly enact blissful, playful pastimes. You are an ocean of unlimited compassion for the conditioned souls. If one is favored by even a sidelong glance of your mercy, he could understand the greatness of your personality. O Lord, your effulgent transcendental body is full of spiritual bliss and free from all material contamination. Who can match your boundless qualities? As an intoxicated bee becomes absorbed in drinking the nectar of a flower, similarly, the mind of a person who has received the mercy of a sadguru becomes absorbed in tasting the nectar of your service. Indeed, such a wise and fortunate person is very rare in this world. Only your devotee, whose consciousness has become pure by serving your merciful lotus feet, can perceive the mysteries of your transcendental pastimes. Without rendering loving service unto you, even one who knows all the Vedas will fail to understand you. Ah, even the personified Vedas could not attain the dust of your lotus feet. Anyone born in Vrindavan is the most fortunate of men. Also blessed are those who contact the pollen from the lotus feet of your eternal associates. After all, your family, beloved friends, character, opulences, holy Dham of Vrindavan are nothing but expansions of you. Therefore, my dear Lord, please allow me to take birth as a bird, human being, or even as a creeper in Vrindavan. I desire such a position because you derive great pleasure from the service rendered by all these creatures, such as the cows, bulls, birds, and parrots. By taking any type of birth in Vrindavan, I will give up my false ego and attain the opportunity to serve your lotus feet, which are the storehouse of unlimited treasures. The Brajabasis are the most glorious of all living entities. They have attained the summit of all pious activities. Although you are the shelter of everything in creation, you take shelter of the residents of Vrindavan. Although you are the matchless, omnipotent, absolute truth, you make friends with the Brajabasis and live amongst them as their greatest treasure. What could be more amazing than this? O Lord of creation, you expanded yourself as thousands of calves to drink the milk of Braja's cows. Who can estimate the limits of the good fortune of these pious cows? Lord Shiva, myself, and the other presiding deities of the 11 senses utilize the senses of the Brajabasis as cups through which we repeatedly drink the intoxicating beverage of the honey nectar of your lotus feet. By this divine connection, we have also become fortunate. However, the good fortune enjoyed by the Brajabasis who directly and intimately serve you is beyond description. Dressing attractively like your mother, Putana smeared deadly poison on her breast and came to kill you. Yet you mercifully promoted her to the spiritual world. How can you possibly repay the Brajabasis who have given you everything they have? Just thinking about this bewilders my mind. O Lord, until one surrenders to your lotus feet, he will remain in a fallen condition imprisoned by the contamination of lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, and madness. O dearest of everyone, without a doubt, only pious and intelligent persons can know your inconceivable qualities. Definitely your glories are beyond the comprehension of my body, mind, and words. O friend of the fallen, please allow me to resume the post of Brahma that you have given and let me return to my abode named Satchaloka. You know the desires of all living entities in creation. Therefore, since I am residing in this world, you also know my desire. Unlike a mundane person, you never forget anything, and you are the embodiment of bliss and knowledge. O Lord, I offer my obeisances at your lotus feet. Having thus offered his prayers, Brahma circumambulated Lord Krishna and returned to Satchaloka. Chakradhara, that is Krishna, holder of the disc, rejoined his calves that sat peacefully munching on fresh grass. Rotating his stick above his head, Krishna signaled to the calves to go back home. The calves ran so quickly that the half-eaten grass fell out of their mouths onto the ground. After bewildering Lord Brahma, the Supreme Brahman, in the form of a human being, took the calves, which were still sitting where they were a year earlier, and brought them to the riverbank, where he had previously enjoyed a picnic with his boyfriends. Yogis perceived this pastime, and they laughed in transcendental bliss. As soon as the coward boys saw Krishna, the peerless jewel, they no longer felt the distress of separation in their minds. Although the boys had passed an entire year apart from the Lord of their lives, due to the covering of Krishna's illusory potency, they felt the year to be half a moment. The coward boys said to Krishna, "O brother, you have quickly returned after defeating the soldiers of the enemy. We have not eaten even a morsel of food in your absence." Illuminated by their bright smiles, the faces of the boys looked very sweet and beautiful. Then the coward boys surrounded their beloved friend Krishna, the remover of all fear. The coward boys continued, "Please take your meal without distraction." The loving friendship they shared with Krishna freed the boys from all types of agony and distress. Seeing their happy faces, Krishna felt unlimited joy within his heart. After relishing this wonderful exchange of transcendental love, Krishna decided to conclude the joyful picnic and return home. Krishna tried to cheer up the boys in order to alleviate the fatigue they felt in their arms and legs from playing so many games. To get relief from the scorching sunshine, Krishna and his friends put on refreshing flower garlands and laid down under the shade of a big tree. Using the thigh of one boy for a pillow, Krishna rested briefly. Above their heads, the sun crossed the courtyard of the sky to enter his house and meet his loving wife, the western direction. To reduce the fiery pain of separation he felt from his wife during the day, the sun radiated blistering heat waves on the people of the earth. Seeing the sun disappearing with his wife, the lotus flowers lost their luster and felt unhappy. As the rays of the setting sun reflected across the ocean of the sky, Krishna decided to bring the calves back home to Vrindavan. When the cowherd boys blew on their flutes and buffalo horns to call the calves, the vibration echoed in all directions. Feeling empty and unhappy, the cowherd boys reluctantly left the forest to return home when they saw rain clouds racing across the evening sky. Taking pleasure in associating with the Lord of their heart, the boys gathered all the calves and quickly walked home. Noticing the remnants of the huge body of the dead serpent Agasura, the cowherd boys thought of using it as a cave for future pastimes. Then they reached the edge of the village. Eager to drink their mother's milk, the calves extended their front legs and tried to run quickly. But because their affectionate Lord Krishna moved behind them, their rear legs refused to cooperate with the front ones, and thus they could not run very fast. As Krishna approached Vrindavan, a flow of nectar poured from his lips as he played sweetly on his flute. The ears of the Brajavasis bathed in spiritual bliss by drinking that ambrosia. They felt the ultimate joy in seeing his lovely form. Beholding the beauty of Krishna brought life back to their bodies that had died in his separation. Due to intense affection, the hearts of Nanda and Yashoda melted in ecstasy. Allured by the sweet sound of Krishna's flute, they hurried to the town gate to greet him. Although Krishna, the universal guru and vanquisher of demons, had killed the demon Agasura 1 year earlier, the cowherd boys thought that on that very day Krishna had killed the demon. The mothers of the boys greeted them happily and beautified them by cleansing the dust from their bodies. With excitement and animation, the cowherd boys told the wonderful pastimes of Krishna. They said, "Mother, Krishna is the crest jewel of all magicians. We personally saw his astounding activities. Our hearts filled with joy as we watched him perform impossible feats. Once Krishna came and saved us when we were trapped in a devastating fire that burned us like poison." The cowherd boys of Vrindavan felt the passage of a year to be but a moment. They explained the pastimes of Krishna in great detail. Pointing with his right index finger, Brajaraj Nanda ordered his royal attendants to serve Krishna. After bathing him, they fed him food and drinks. Then Krishna, of reddish eyes and charming character, found relief in their tender care. His body excelled the softness of a sarissa flower and the coolness of camphor. After Mother Yashoda tenderly fondled her beloved son, Nanda asked Krishna to take rest. Nanda Maharaj said, "Yashoda, as a wealthy man keeps his clothes and servants in separate rooms, now I think we should make a separate room for Krishna to sleep in." Smiling slightly, Yashoda replied, "But it seems that only a few days have passed since his birth. Even now he can hardly protect himself. I cannot live a moment without having him sit on my lap." Understanding her heart, Nanda Maharaj replied with gentle words, "Oh, Yashoda, your memory is not very good. From the moment of his birth, you have enjoyed the wealth of his pastimes. On one side, we are very wealthy." But not replying, Yashoda communicated her approval. Nanda felt elated to see her response, so the next day he built special quarters for Krishna. Despite unlimited personal efforts, one cannot understand the transcendental pastimes of Krishna. Even though he outwits the best of yogis, Lord Brahma became totally bewildered by this tiny boy. During this time, Krishna killed a variety of demons like Vatsasura, Bakasura, and Agasura. Krishna also bewildered Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, while enjoying a picnic on the bank of the Yamuna. Thus ends the description of the Kumara Lila of Lord Sri Krishna.